Ed, are you on with us? I just want to make sure Ed's here. Hello, Ed? Well, we've lost our dear recording man, who's also the bridge line man.
Yeah,
if my hello? If my assistant is on, would you try to reach Ed and let him know that I'm on successfully now? So I'm a little hesitant to say let's get started because I think the recording's going to not be happening. So why don't we just talk for a brief moment here?
Okay, if you like. All right. How has it been going so far for everybody? Have they been able to get in a lot of information for all your other sessions? And do we have some questions in the meantime we can handle?
Oh, that's a great idea. Actually, there was a question that an artist sent in. It's an interesting question, and I may just take notes. It's not exactly on target with today, but I still thought you might be good for this one.
I have a couple others from people, and I am going to get back to you as well on those. Yeah.
Okay, well, why don't we do those while we're waiting? Ed, are you there yet? No, he's not there. This artist said that there's a trend she's noticed that artists are calling themselves colorists. And she wants to know, what's the difference between an artist who defines themselves as a colorist or a painter?
Oh, I think you better ask that question of
Claudine.
Hello.
Pardon me. Hi, Ariane.
Yes.
It is recording currently.
Okay, thank you. Great. All right, thank you so much. So let me just say first, hi, you're on day 5 of the Smartest Telesummit. 2007, and we're back from our 15-minute break, which is now extended a bit, ready for the final keynote of the day. Yesterday, you got a taste for how Alita can go deep, and today, you'll be treated to her practical side. You're going to go fast today. Do you want me to come back at the end to field questions for you?
That would be helpful. It was fun to do that with you yesterday, and
all right.
You'll know everything is humming along here.
Yes, as long as, and if for some reason I'm not back, you'll know I had whatever glitch in the beginning happened again. Let's hope not, but you'll just know that that's what's going on, and just go ahead and end the session on your own if I'm not there.
Okay, we'll carry on. So now I'm going to stay on while I just do the Star 5, will you?
Yes.
Okay, talk, Ariane.
I'm here.
I can hear you. Now, talk an artist, please.
No, you're supposed to hear me.
I know, and I want an artist to talk now.
Hello?
Hello?
I can hear
you.
It didn't work. Thank you. I'll try that again. That's why I want to do it with you on the line, Ariane. Okay, an artist, please talk. Oh, I don't like it, but I can't hear you, so it's working. All right, let's get started.
All right, go ahead.
This is Getting Collectors Without Getting a Gallery. And actually, I've been tossing back and forth about that word getting. It's probably more like finding. And I think probably if you think of that as finding, it's more like finding treasures, because really that's kind of the way I want you to look at it. But finding collectors without getting a gallery is for any artist who wants to sell directly, so you're not dependent on gallery representation to make a living making art. But having said that, I know that galleries are always interested in working with artists who already have a healthy mailing list, who already have proof of the ability to get exposure, and who are able to build a business relationship. If there is any gross misunderstanding about how the art world works, there is this sometimes an adversarial attitude between artists and gallery dealers, and it goes both ways, that really doesn't serve you. And the more that you get into thinking about finding out what's the win-win in every situation, whether it's with a gallery dealer or another venue, the more success you're going to get. Because these days we all need all the help we can get, and it's a numbers game. So you need to be able to get your exposure. You need to be able to solve a lot of problems on your own, too. And these are all the kinds of things that you're going to have to look at. But it's great to be able to have this freedom, because now that all the art world is everywhere, that you can see it on the web, you can see it online, you can talk to people about art just about anywhere, anytime. When you had a very traditional closed system, all of that wasn't possible. So while there are some drawbacks to doing it all on your own, it's all trade-offs, because life is all trade-offs anyway. So I will talk to you about first things first and 7 prerequisites just to get in this whole game, because actually I'm going to suggest that you think about getting collectors and maybe getting a gallery. Why not have it all? The next thing I'll talk about is trade-offs. There are pros and cons, and I'll talk about them in relation to art business benefits, art career drawbacks, in art marketing opportunities. Number four, the next area that I'll talk about is three alternatives to galleries, and I'll talk about them fairly briefly, and we could talk about each one of these for a couple of hours at least. But you will find in the article that I sent you more detail about two of those. But there are three alternatives, basically. I'll come to those when we get there. And then I want you to put on a different hat than your artist hat for the section that follows that. And I want you to start to learn how, or you're probably already doing that, a lot of you, but to think more and more like an alternative gallery dealer. So be your own gallery dealer. And then my last word with a few points that I think out of all the work that I've been doing, like with artists that do sell their own work directly, that I think will help you. So first things first, to get gallery collectors, rather with or without a gallery, you still need lots of exposure. And we talk about seven dynamic factors in getting exposure in artist career training. All of these go together. They're not sequential. They're happening all at once when you're really into it. And those are, number one, creating a consistent body of signature work. I can't express strongly enough, and I'm sure you've heard it from others too, that you need to have lots of work to be able to sort from that work the works that's ready for prime time, and to be able to decide how that work is going to be marketed. If it's not signature work, it's hard for you to figure out what your artistic direction is, and then it's hard for you to find your audience. And it's all in a really integrated way that you need to see all of this. It has to be documented and impeccable and ready to show at a moment's notice. Number two is you need to hone your professional persona. And those of you that have heard me speak before, a lot of people when they meet me say they don't believe it, but I'm an introvert. I just have good social skills. I've learned to have those in order to do what I want to do, which is to work with artists like you and other people to help them. So you need to figure out what your persona is. And you know from your own experience that when you're at different kinds of events, you do behave slightly differently. It's the event environment. It's your own goals. It's whoever else is there and all that interaction. But when you're out there marketing, and I sent you an article that I co-wrote with Margaret Danielak. Margaret is absolutely crystal clear on this one, that when she's at an artist show, she actually calculates the amount of time that the opening is on for, how many people are there. She divides that and figures she better have maybe a minute and a half for everybody to get around and say hello, and she does. So she makes sure that she's up and on when she's there. But we've also gone to other events where it's a completely different Margaret that you see, and it's the same for you. Number three is that you need to develop and use your mailing list all the time. That means that you need to be clear about your art audience. If you don't know who your art audience is, you're going to spend a lot of extra money sending out mailings to people, a lot of time creating emails and newsletters, and you may end up annoying people, and you never, never, never want that. You want to send only to the people who want to hear from you, and that takes a little research on your part. Now, number one, I already talked about in documenting a body of signature work. Number four in this list of seven is photographing and documenting your work in many ways. These days, it can't be just one format. You need to be able to produce JPEGs, slides, CDs, whatever, again, your audience wants to see. B.J. Katz, who's one of the famous graduates of the Artist Career Training Program, you'll find her in our featured artist section. When she started out, she had maybe a few hundred people on her mailing list. She now is up to 17,000. She has done all of these other sections ahead, but she is clear that her photographs, and she does fused glass work, so that's not easy to do, were what led the way for her to be able to get to meet some of these people. Number five is you need to be generating publicity and media attention. And that means you need to know how to do that. How do you submit press releases? How do you send out press kits? What is newsworthy? You have to figure out what's newsworthy, too, because it's not, I'm having another show. Number six is you need to learn how to maintain professional business relationships. And I already alluded to this in when I talked to you about needing to think about business relationships with galleries and other venues. That requires a couple of things. People skills, but most importantly, and this, you know, I'm going to write about this next month because it just keeps coming up in my face. One of the single biggest things that artists don't do when they're working on relationships is follow through. So make sure that you do that. I think one of the other, Ariane mentioned it when we were in the class yesterday, I believe. Well, I send out all these postcards and nothing's happened. It's the same with press and same with anybody that you meet in the course of your business. It's the follow-through that makes the difference. Think about it yourself. Don't you appreciate it when someone catches up with you on something you've been meaning to get around to? So don't worry about annoying people if it's done the right way. Follow-through is very, very important. And number seven, and this is really important if you're doing all of your own direct marketing without representation, is you need to absolutely know how to market your art in person and on the Internet. And if you listen or read about any of the established artists, they all say that they are so driven and committed that they'll do what it takes to get there. We had Brenda Swenson, who is a well-known, she's written several books, well-known watercolorist, say, you know, I learned to drive on highways that I would never have driven on. Small things like that, but to her this was huge. But she did it because she wanted to get there and get her collectors. And she has a very large following, so this all really works. So there are seven factors that you need to have in place. And each of these, as you know, takes a lot of introspection, a lot of work, but you can get there. Now, trade-offs. There are pros and cons to absolutely everything. And so, remember, since the entry requirements are the same, think about combining traditional and alternative instead of saying, I'm going to go for one or the other. But start where you're comfortable, start where your work fits, and start where your goals are also going to fit with the exposure that you want to get. Now, here are some things to think about as far as businesses to your art business. Now, this means that you have to be pretty self-directed to do this. But number one, exposure the way you want it, your way, not the highway. Number two, your very own audience. You get to keep the mailing list. This is very important, and you build relationships with them. And you build, more importantly, since people buy part of you as well as the art, you build future possible purchases because they'll have relationships with you that may lead to others. Number three, your qualified mailing list. This is such an asset that you need to be working on it all of the time. Think about it. It's the way that you get the information to and from the people that are going to be looking at and buying your work. And if any of you have ever tried to get a mailing list from a gallery dealer, you'll know they consider it an asset. They work very hard to build it, and you and that mailing list are what allows them to be in business and, of course, a little bit of space to house everything. So work hard on your mailing list. This is one of the best ways to get and keep collectors. Number four is you need to learn to build a very broad variety of business relationships. And if you're an introvert, this is going to be challenging, but it's not impossible. If you're an extrovert, you'll have other challenges. You'll have to learn when to listen instead of when to talk. But business relationships require a lot. They require time, and they require good listening, and they require thinking about what you can do to help the other person. Because most of you will discover that if you're doing that, and it may not be about your art that you help them, but that may come back to you as a purchase. Art is weird. It's you never know exactly where the contact that you made is going to lead. Number five is this is a great advantage. You get direct feedback on your art, on the way you do business, and on your marketing skills, because there is no better indicator than your sales. If you're not getting your sales doing it on your own, then one of those three is not working very well. Number six is you get direct sales, direct representation, and that means that you will get to keep more money in your pocket. However, I have a strong caution for you here. Make sure you take some of that money and put it into your marketing budget. And if you're not very good about keeping budgets just on paper and you need to put it in a separate bank account, do that too. When you pay a commission to a gallery, they're doing a lot of this work for you that you're not going to have to do yourself. They pay money to do a lot of those things. You're going to have to pay that yourself. So you need to make sure that you can keep funding all of this as it goes along. And the best way to do it is when you make a sale, take a piece right out of there. I know that when I first was working in banking, I'm a recovering banker, for those of you who don't know that, they used to encourage us to take 10% out of our savings, out of our paycheck, and put it right into a savings account. Tithing is the same. You give 10% to charity immediately. Well, and this tithes some of this back to yourself so that you can stay in business. Now, the other thing that's interesting about this is that you may also have access to residencies through this kind of approach, because there are many people who offer these kinds of things, and the way they find artists who they want to honor or help with their awards or with their actual workshops and residency development, they'll go to the kinds of alternative venues that you will be setting up for yourself. And you may not know that they're there, but they could lead to money and to exposure for you. Number seven is through your own experience, you're literally going to get a master's in the art of business. There is absolutely nothing like being out there and being involved with people in the business. You can do a lot by internet, you can do a lot by telephone, but you do have to get out there and interact with them. You'll pick up a lot of things that will help you. So all of this will make your art business healthier. And so you see, that's going to work for you whether or not you're with a gallery. In fact, it will strengthen your ability to negotiate with galleries. Drawbacks. One of the drawbacks is, you know, the benefit is it's self-directed. What drawback is, obviously, complexity is going to increase significantly for you. Number one, you must know everything a gallery and a dealer knows and more. Gallery dealers actually don't all know as much as artists do because who exhibit themselves, because they're all over the place, and gallery dealers stay more focused in a lot of cases unless they have national galleries. So you're going to have to know all of that. Number two, I know this one really well. You might be your own worst boss. You have to learn how to manage your time, your energy, and your motivation, because you're the only one doing that. Number three is you may do it all, but you may not do it all equally well. And that can be a drawback. You can always throw other people's time or money at it. And there's always somebody in the world who absolutely loves to do the very thing that you don't like to do. I find this quite a miracle, and I rely on it a lot in the artist career training business. Number four, you may spend as much on mistakes as you could invest in either educating yourself or getting representation. So if you were on the call yesterday, you'll remember I said a mistake is only a mistake if you leave it where it was. A mistake can be taken over again, but that requires you to do some reflection, see what didn't work, and decide what you think might work this time and go for that. Again, there won't necessarily be any guarantees, but it will give you an idea of how you can invest that time better the next time. Number five, you need to do this well if you're doing your own shows and sales, because you don't want to alienate any possible representation either. So be respectful always of any galleries that approach you, or of anybody that approaches you. You never know who they are. Some of you may know Jane Chavez. She is in Santa Fe, Mexico, and we interviewed her for one of our teleclasses because she's done something very unusual. She has baskets that she's woven. She's created her own design, but so have a lot of other artists. But what made her baskets distinctive was she was looking for a way to put her signature on them. And what she did was she took a silver stamp and put her name and her emblem into that and wove it directly into the basket. So that in itself made her basket weaving style something unusual. And she actually got this trademark on this, which has helped her to market her work even more. So if you... When she did that, at that point, she actually started creating more energy for people to see her work just because she was putting so much focus into it. And one of the things that you can think about is being able to find something unusual about your work that allows you to speak to collectors a little differently. So Jane was at one of these shows one day, and the end of the day came, and all the other artists were packing up at 4:45, and the show was going on until 5. And a man came along dressed in what you might describe as gardening clothes, and he wasn't particularly well-groomed. And she thought, oh, no, do I have to talk to somebody else? I'm ready to pack up. I want to go. But she didn't. He came over. He looked at her work. He said, nice work. And she's thinking, oh, what do you know about art? He says, you ought to take this down to 13 Moons Gallery. Tell them I sent you. And she said, well, what is your name? James. I think that was the name. I don't recall the details now, but there's an article on this in Crass Report. And it turned out to be the owner of this 13 Moons Gallery. When she got down there, she didn't know that. They immediately let her in. She had a portfolio, and she was able to get her work into the gallery. She was not looking for a gallery dealer. The person that she saw in front of her didn't look like one at all. but she treated them just like everybody else, with grace and respect, and that's really important to do. Number six, the complexity I mentioned earlier is you kind of need multiple personas. I know that when I'm on the phone negotiating with a supplier, I am in a different persona than when I'm on the phone working with an artist who wants to make a better living. There's just completely difference, and I have to remember the spot that I'm on, and I also have to remember when I move from one interaction to the next very quickly, as I tend to do, to switch gears. So if you do a lot of work on the phone or even in person and you know that you don't make those personality turns quickly, make sure you give yourself some time. I've learned to make sure I have 5 minutes in between any calls that I make. Number seven is you have to integrate multiple sources of income into a coherent career strategy. And that takes some planning and some juggling. Again, some direct examples of artists who got carried away with planning all these open studios and shows and then also did land gallery representation. And one artist in one of our programs found herself with a reception on a Friday on the West Coast and on Saturday on the East Coast. And she managed it, but it's not ideal. So then, those are all the drawbacks and the complexity and all that. That's great. But what are the opportunities here? I think there are many. Number one is, first of all, you get your more eggs and more baskets. This is always a good thing these days. That's the overall, I think, really the opportunity that you have. So the first thing is the personal becomes professional. Who you are becomes part of the brand. It is anyway, but be more conscious about it. Be conscious about who you are as an artist every minute of the day. I went walking this morning in the hills, and I saw one of my neighbors. Talked to her. I've talked to her three times now. I discovered last time that she's an artist. And I had a business card tucked in my shoe. I always go everywhere. I'm famous for that. Handed it to her, and now we're talking about how she can increase her business. So, you know, anything that you do personally can, with art, it's so wonderful. As I said yesterday, it's not like dentistry. And I apologize if any of you are dentists, too. I really appreciate all of you, but art is so easy to get into conversation with people about. And marketing being a series of conversations, the first place to start is with your person and your passion about it. Number two, you can offer originals and you can offer self-produced multiples, and there's no limits because you're the one in charge of what the value of your work is and how much of it you want out there. So you're not living with somebody else's restrictions. Number three is you can have multiple shows in the same geographic area. And people will see you again and again. And they go, wow, she's everywhere. He's everywhere. Number four is you can create multiple bodies of work. I know there are some of you out there who are still trying to decide which of the five things you do is the one you really want to make money with. Well, for some of you, you're going to have to do some experimenting. And you can do that by going into different markets. You can do originals or you can do posters. You can even, some artists do fine art and craft. Because for some of them, the fine art is so detailed and so time-consuming that they feel they need to actually build something in the meantime. So it allows you to do that. That leads to number five, which it does allow you to get multiple sources of income, and they may be smaller amounts, but they will be spread out coming from different sources. And, you know, yesterday again, you heard some people talk about galleries going out of business. I just went back to one that I thought, no sign when I was there 2 weeks ago that it was going to go out. Went back, gone. Sign in the window, moved. Nothing beyond that. Number six is you can have various price points for many levels of collectors, as opposed to a gallery where they tend to have a certain kind of collector, level of collector that's more of a niche market in one gallery. And you can go anywhere you want. But be careful here because you do not want to have inconsistent pricing. That's at least a day. But you heard about pricing earlier. Jeffrey mentioned how important that was. Ariane's spoken about it too. Number seven, this is the one that I think is really one of the best opportunities, is you get to collaborate with many people, and therefore you fill the funnel for each other. When you're working on your own, I mean, artists love to have solo shows, and it's a real ego boost. But a solo show means you're depending entirely on your mailing list. Group shows, you get people from all over. And I know that means, too, you have to open up a little bit. Some of those myths yesterday will pop up here. Because I had one artist say, well, why would I want to do that? They might want my friend's work and not mine. And I looked at her and I said, well, they might. But some of her collectors might want some of yours. And that, in fact, is exactly what happened. It doesn't always happen that way immediately, but hold out for it. And collaboration, I mean, performance artists absolutely know this. They get a lot further with their marketing when there are many heads on it. But another trade-off there, you know, group dynamics. Don't get me started on that. That was my recovering banker life, too. But you need to pay attention to who's in the group. So those are all the basics of what you need to be doing yourself, why the benefits, the opportunities. What are the alternatives? There are a lot of them, and in the article that I sent, I don't know if you have that article, but I sent Ariane an article to send on to you. There are many different suggestions in that article that are come from a book, and I mentioned her earlier, Margaret Danielak. She's a graduate of the Artist Career Training Workshop, and she's often said that 80% of her success comes from putting into practice all the things that we teach, but doing it consistently. And so I would highly recommend that you look at what Margaret has to say. In the meantime, what she says in her article, I just want to briefly run over with you, the three alternatives that we talk about there, in case you haven't seen it. The first thing is that most of the things she talks about are artist-initiated exhibitions, so open studios and so on. I have a list of 35 and counting, and I'll send a list to you if you want, if you'd like it later. But let me just run down quickly some of them. Architects, art fairs, artist organizations, commissions, co-op galleries, developers, golf clubs, healing arts and hospitals, public arts programs, quiz shows, speaking engagements. Those are just a few, and I know there's more than 35. She has a number listed as well. But artists initiate, anything you want to do is possible. I've seen shows in libraries. I've seen shows in restaurants. I've gone to a lot of different venues, but it does all have to eventually come together again into some kind of a whole. Because if, and W-H-O-L-E, that one. Otherwise, you'll be in the hole, H-O-L-E. You need to think about how that if you have people who come to your shows regularly, that you want them to feel some consistency. So you shouldn't look for the most different venues necessarily all over the place, but look for something that's unusual. And remember that it needs to be, it's entertainment for a lot of people. The purchase and so on will be a byproduct of how much the people at your shows feel connection with you and your art. So that's the important thing to keep in mind. Margaret herself is an artist rep. So when you're running your shows, it's all what you want, and you're totally in charge. You're still in charge when you're working with these other people, and there are still alternatives to galleries, but you still need to direct them. And Margaret is the first person to tell you that. Margaret has seven or eight artists at most that she represents at any time. And artists, I'm often asked, how do I find one? I think this is many artists' dream. Just get me someone who will take this all away from me and do it for me. And it doesn't work that way. In fact, getting out there, getting exposure, making a name for yourself in all the ways that you can will get the attention of some of these reps. And that's how Margaret has found some of the people that she's worked with as well. Some people do approach her, but they have to have a very strong body of work, and they need to be able to prove that they can sell as well as she can. She had a very good year last year. She had a target, and I think she absolutely made it, but she sets targets for that kind of thing too. So this is also the idea that you should be keeping in mind. How many do I want to sell? How many places do I need to go? How can I meet artist reps? I mean, the best thing is to keep reading, find places where they go, and get to build a relationship with them. Don't automatically walk up to them with your portfolio and say, here I am. It doesn't impress a lot of them. Art consultants are a different breed. They are really representing the buyer. And a lot of corporations have buyers for art. And they're also often pretty hard to get to. Because naturally there are, you know, people think, oh, good, if I get my work in there, I'm golden. But you can get to them alternative ways as well. A lot of them, for example, I've seen contests run for corporations for different purposes, and they will screen them through that. There are also rental programs all over that they will sometimes go through rental programs for a while to find out the artist. But the best thing to do is to get to know people in corporations that buy art, and find out who actually makes the decisions about it. Because the art consultant will be paid by the corporation, and they will buy what the person who likes to make the decisions wants. So, again, though, it's not unlike having a gallery dealer in that with either of these people, you need to build a business relationship, and you're sharing the wealth. You're sharing the income, and you're also sharing the airtime. When you're working with a rep like that, a rep or a consultant, it's really important to make sure you're in tune with their approach. Because, again, I've heard stories from Margaret about people she's worked with in the past who did not necessarily, couldn't keep up with her because she has enormous energy and is always promoting her artist. They couldn't produce what she needed within 24 hours, or they decided to try and market directly on themselves. And you start to create rifts in a relationship that way. So any kind of relationship like that, make sure you're upfront about those kinds of issues. So how do you think like a gallery dealer then? I mean, in finding these alternative venues, here's seven factors to consider. The first one is, why do you want to show your work? If you just want to get it out there, that's really not good enough. What is the ultimate reason you want to get it out there? That will help you pick venues. Do you want a museum curator to see it? Do you want a gallery dealer to see it? Do you just want to sell it? Do you just want to show it? All of these things are the starting point for you creating a strategy. Otherwise, it's ready, fire, aim, and you'll get the results you get from that. You won't necessarily know if you got anything. So a theme is a really good way to start thinking about it. There is a very interesting person, and I mentioned her, I believe, yesterday, but I've taught three classes, so I can't tell if it was to you or not. She, Marianne Rentmore, was the person who had this platypus art business that had all different kinds. She could do anything. She had different media. She had different subject matter. She eventually, though, settled on a theme of her subject matter that was all about recreating mythology, and particularly mythology about goddesses. And she started off with that, and she was creating materials with it and product with it, but wasn't really coming together. When I asked her what really attracted her to this area, she said it was the research and understanding the meaning of the myths. So for her, the art was a byproduct of that. And when she realized that it needed to be just all of that needed to be much more of her whole life. So she actually changed her business name. She actually changed also a number of the ways in which she presented her work. She went and found others who were doing similar work, but nothing quite like hers, which was good, and eventually got involved with other people who were doing things like tarot and related kinds of conferences. She was the only artist selling at those, so imagine how good that is. It came out of a long process, but now she's able to do that much more coherently. So that's the kind of thing to think about. A theme will help you organize your venues and your marketing. And you need to. Then you'll also be able to find lots of reasons why people will come, because it'll get exciting for you. I mentioned this earlier. Who is your audience? If you're in charge of your art, then I said this yesterday too. Your customers are in charge of your sales, and you better know who they are and what they like and how they like to be treated. The first time I did a show, I had no idea about marketing. This was back before, a long time ago. I won't tell you how long. And I decided that, well, if I wanted to go to a show, what would I want it to be like? And I started thinking from that way. I guess I've always been trained that way anyway. But think about your audience and what they would like, and if you have some long-term collectors, you can even involve them in the planning of some of the events. Some of them really enjoy that because they feel like they have the inside track. What will you present? This is really important. This is where you become your own curator. You have to think about art selection. You have to think about framing, pricing, display, sales, and packaging. And all of these things have to be professional standard. They're really, if you want to go without professional representation, then you got to put the professional in yourself. The next thing, when and where. Now, how are you going to let people find you? This requires, again, a whole list of things that you already need to be adept at if you want to do this. Advertising. Branding. I've talked a lot about that today, branding. Your mailing list. Your media list. Publicity. Previews. Reminders. And signage. And especially for open studios, signage is really important. all of these, how you handle these depend on your theme and your budget, and you can do them at no cost or low cost. So there's a long list, but it doesn't have to necessarily cost you a lot of money. But it will take, if you take less money, it's going to take more thought and more energy. So just keep that all in mind. Who will help you? This is often the last thing artists think about, but you really need to. Who's going to help you with, for example, loading, all the hanging, all those different things that if you're not adept at that, somebody needs to be. I don't know anybody who really likes to do all of these things on their own. The other thing is that the company really helps. But find out who will also help you during the event at the venue. If you're the artist there, someone else needs to be in charge of the money and directing people and getting them on your mailing list if you really want to build relationship with people. So there are lots more details about that. We spend a lot of time talking about how to run open studios. How will you produce results? You've got to start with a plan that and a checklist, ideally, because there's a lot to deal with in all of these different ways of showing. You organize it, and then you act. You take action. If it's the first time that you've done this, the most important thing you can do is give yourself enough time to do these things without having to compress them, because if it's something new, guaranteed there's going to be something you didn't know about that will come up during it. And you also want to have enough time to stop and observe what's happening and make sure that you really glean everything you can out of all the interactions that you're having, because you never know when a detail in a conversation is going to be useful later. You have to, the last thing is the results. I mentioned this at the beginning for a reason. Follow through and follow up. Anything that you do, any show, any event, anything at all, is just a punctuation point. It's not the end. If you mistake it for the end, you'll be sitting there waiting for something to happen. And we're coming up to the end because I hear a little crunching there. The last word, I'll go through this really quickly, and then we'll open up for questions. Number one, be prolific. It's a numbers game. Number two, be professional, personable, and prompt. Number three, decide, learn, act, adjust. Number four, location, location, location. Number five, ask for what you want. Number six, work with what you get. Number seven, build support systems. So there are only three ways to grow a business. You get more people, you get a higher amount for each purchase, or you get people that come back more and more. All of these will be ways that you can find to get people to do that and help you grow your art business. Ariane, are you back with us?
Oh, I have never left, actually.
Ah, okay.
Wow, Alita, that is just incredible. My arm is actually hurting. I took so many notes. So I just want to remind the artists who also are experiencing Alita's bullet point style today that you can go back and listen to this recording as many times as you need to fill in the blanks. So don't worry about if you missed a few things. And before we open up for questions, I just want everybody who has an Earthlink email address to stay on with me till the end, because I have a really important note that I have to give you about that. Okay, we're going to take a few questions. Just probably we're not going to have time for more than one or two, so hang on. I'm going to unmute us, and if you have a question, be sure to unmute yourself with star six. Okay.
Yes.
Please say your name first so that I can acknowledge you.
Jan from Elkhart, Indiana.
Ann?
Jan.
Go right ahead.
Yes. I was wondering, a gallery versus selling your own, what do you do about pricing? Since a gallery marks it up, selling it on your own, do you still try to the same price that it is at the gallery? Or
I'm having trouble hearing the
hang on, I'm going to mute us. Somebody has a crying child in the background.
Yeah.
Hold on. Okay, go ahead, Alita.
Okay, I couldn't hear all the questions. Did you catch all the questions?
Okay, hang on. Okay, we're going to try again. You want to say the question again? We couldn't catch the whole thing with the child in the background.
Okay, thank you. What I was wondering is, if you have work in a gallery, you mark it up a certain percentage. But if you're selling it on your own or in a venue where you are not paying any commission, what do you do about pricing? Because if they see the same piece of art at one venue and going to a gallery and it's 40% higher, what does that do to your reputation and how does that work?
Well, I think you could both, someone else could probably answer that. My first observation is, well, what would you think if you were the purchaser? You would not want to see that. So from a collector's point of view, I think that's a big mistake because they're actually going to see that. Someone's going to run across that somewhere, and you're going to lose credibility, and you can't say, well, the gallery puts a markup on it. From the gallery point of view, if you have a relationship with a gallery and you're selling at a different price, then that's also a problem because you're basically underselling them, and there must be something in your agreement about that. You should also be careful about exclusivity, those kinds of issues. I need to know a lot more about the contracts that you have to answer more than that. But is
Alita, I have a quick little thing, if I can jump in.
Sure.
There's a very practical side. That 40% markup, you actually need, because that's the markup. It's going to put the budget that you can actually do these things yourself. That's why galleries charge 40% or more, because they're doing all the things for you that now you have to do, and you need a budget for that.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to make during the call, actually. That's
you did make it during the call.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Now, what is, but there, you still have a question. What's your residual question then?
Well, that was basically it, because I've not only thought of that myself, but I've heard a lot of other artists come up with the same question.
Yeah.
It's a great question.
Yeah, and don't do it.
Right. Thank you. Okay. All right, if you can mute yourself back again, that would be great. And if another artist wants to ask a question, we can take one more.
I've got a question.
Yes. Your name?
This is Tracy.
Tracy, go ahead.
I was wondering where do you go to either source out or find corporate art buyers or a rental program? Is a rental program something you do yourself, or are there, like, agencies that do that?
Great question. Let's let her answer, dear.
Yeah, very good question. Corporate art, but there are registries of them and lists that you can get, but I caution you, if you just buy the list, make sure you qualify. Always qualify any mailing list that you buy by making sure you know who's on it. There are also rental programs available through arts organizations that you can find, and they are managed usually by someone in the arts organization, so that's great because you don't have to do anything but provide the art. I get the others. You said corporate art.
She wanted corporation, how you get to
them. And corporations, yeah. And that basically there, you just got to research them one at a time and go find out look through the art magazines for ads and so on first. But I'll tell you that great sources are hospitals. The pharmaceuticals are one of the best. In fact, AstraZeneca and Syntex were two organizations that probably changed names by now, who have had long-term corporate buying programs. If you can get connected to someone in one of those, they can tell you where the rest of them are.
Great. Okay, hang on. I'm going to mute us back there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry we've run out of time, but you are so welcome to send your questions by email, and I will forward them to Alita. And Alita, thank you. That was just breathtakingly fantastic and jam-packed.
I warned you.
Take care of yourself, and we'll be in touch, my dear.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. So we are at the end of Smartest Telesummit 2007, Day 5. Look for more handouts tonight for tomorrow's sessions. If you have feedback for us, what is working better or could be working, is already working great, the testimonial line is open, 1-800-871-9012, extension 19-59-1 pound. Or you can email us at info@smartest-telesummit.com. Tomorrow we'll have Molly Gordon, Michael Woodward, and myself. For EarthLink people, please put book into your email address. These two emails we're having info@smartest-telesummit.com, smartest.telesummit@gmail.com. That's smartest.telesummit@gmail.com. Okay, everybody, see you tomorrow, same time, same place, where Smartest, the first ever online professional art career conference, is determined to help you work smart, sell smart, and inspire the world with your art. Good day.